It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
Okay, I've got to admit, I'm lost as to where we're at in all this tape recording podcast land.
July 3rd.
Today is July 3rd.
Oh,
it's fireworks?
Tomorrow is the 4th of July.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Of course, today it's June 24th, and I'm fixing to head out to Portland. And
We've been traveling fools and ships passing in the night and guest people. I enjoyed those silk people.
Gosh, I did too. And I, for those of you that were wondering, I guess he survived the NASCAR trip too. So he survived.
Yeah, we haven't got a report of his hair go on fire.
Oh, you didn't get it? He sent me a picture.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess you're better buddies.
Probably. He said he crossed the finish line first, had a picture of him and the checkered flag, but there's no other cars in the scene, so I don't know if they were behind him or in front of him. I run back. I'm saying it's a little...
Are you sure?
A little suspect as to exactly what happened there.
But Danny Smilk is a smooth character.
You know, I was talking to a good friend of mine from 34 years ago, when I pastored in a fellowship in Fresno. Was at the wedding Danny Silk did in Hawaii the week before he was there with us. I'm like, sometimes this world is creepingly small.
It is, I tell you.
That's a little creepy.
We're an inbred lot.
I've gotten chewed out by a couple of people. How dare you cut the podcast in half? Why didn't you just let it go for 90 minutes? They didn't want to wait a week for the second half.
Oh, well,
that's a good sign.
That is a good sign, but there's too many people that would complain because 45 minutes seems to be just their appropriate listening commute time.
Yeah, but people were not getting this one in on one commute anyway. These are people listening to it on different commutes going, just keep going. They loved it, so that was great. We enjoyed getting to know them and had some great conversation with them after that we could have also taped but didn't. So it was all good.
Yeah, I just found so much of how they were looking at life very refreshing and very freeing. It's not my responsibility to fix a whole bunch of other people. I can't. I get that.
Yes, I love that. And I love the fact that you can't have reconciliation without two empowered people.
Yeah.
If one of them feels inferior, insecure, whatever, you can't get to a place of wholeness together. You just can't.
Yeah, you can't do much of anything without two people feeling empowered.
Yeah, and willing to work together to do what's best.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, nothing else happens. That's that whole culture of honor. If you don't get that first, all the discipline stuff is just discipline stuff. So
I think it's a pretty amazing thing. If you don't have that in the context of your relationship with God, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, how true is that?
I mean, the whole dynamic that it's like God isn't trying to pull rank, and he isn't trying to get us to jump through hoops because he's God, or just because I said so. I mean, I know you can pull those things when you're kind of being silly as parents, and just like, well, gee, that doesn't really bring an education or enlightenment to your kids as to why that should be found in their heart. You can get them to do it, but it doesn't bring change, transformation, or allow for relationship.
And I think that's the fight over how God's love empowers us into a relationship that's not just a subservient one. I'm God, do it because I told you, or be damned. It's God inviting us into a relationship. We don't come in as his equals. We're not in any way, shape, or form other than his gracious love has offered us an opportunity to be Abba kids on the lap of the Father.
I think the glorious freedom of it, it's not about equality. It's not about rank. It's about decision-making responsibility. I think the beauty is it doesn't have to be equal power. It's just you have to have two individuals that are bringing with them the decision-making power of choice. I'm choosing to be in this relationship. I have volitional engagement here. I'm not being forced because there's no relationship in that.
Right, and you can choose out of it if you want.
Yeah.
With God. You can choose to live outside that relationship.
And real love has to let that happen.
Yeah.
You can't grab onto your kids or anybody for that matter and force relationship. You must love me. And I think people's mindset that it's like, well, God, what's wrong with God's issues? If we don't love him, he's going to just roast us. It's like, I don't even think that's accurate. Anywhere close to his heart. He didn't force us to be in relationship, even though he longs for it.
And he's not threatening us with not being. He's just saying there are dire consequences to you refusing the life of love. Not his consequences, the consequences of the way the world is made, the way God wanted to do it. I got this from Laura about the podcast with Danny and Sherry. It's no wonder we live in a world full of addiction, compulsion, and abuse. Y'all with Danny and Sherry have, I believe, hit on the reason for such rampant codependency. Then she didn't say what it was.
Darn. What'd we hit?
I think it was this. I think it was about being empowered people in a relationship and stop trying to change each other. And I think that is why this world is full of powerful people and insecure, unpowerful people, and the manipulations and all the stuff that goes on, both by those who are insecure trying to manipulate from a sense of powerlessness their way, and those who are powerful pushing their will on other people. I mean, it's just, I think it really strikes to why our world is so messed up, because we don't understand the nature of a real relationship.
Yeah.
And God's come to show us that, not in, again, God doesn't become our equal. I love the way you said that. It's not about equality. Because Jesus even said stuff like, you know, if you're my friends if you do what I command you, or if you'll do what I command you. It's kind of like, well, now what kind of friendship is that? You know, if I said to you, Brad, you're my friend when you do whatever I command you, going, yeah, well, okay.
Oh, but I know that.
You wish. You'd be better off if that were. No. But what Jesus is saying is we live in the friendship by learning to live in his agenda rather than our own takes us into horrible places. His life in us takes us into wonderful places. So if you want to live in my love, then follow me. Trust me here. It's not a relationship of equals. It's a relationship of the created to the creator. But in that relationship, God's given us a lot of space to be who we are and for him to shape and change us rather than us just live as these fearful slaves.
Yeah, and I think one of the most beautiful things to recognize is when God is saying, hey, I want you to walk this way. Follow me. I want you to live inside this. It isn't the imposition of his agenda. He's kind of like, you know what? I really don't know what else to direct you towards that's going to have any kind of freedom like I want you to have. Because I think when God's inviting you, and I don't know about you, but he didn't give me all the details. There is so much room in my decision-making that factors under the fact that it's within his will, that you're just going like, gosh, sometimes I get scared by the lack of definition or the lack of clarity on that. And I've learned that that's that space I get to grow in.
Yeah.
He really does want me to make decisions like he would, but he's not making them for me. We're
making me
live.
Make them. Yeah.
And it's like, guess what? I might get some of them wrong. And that's going to be okay.
Yeah.
How else do I learn?
For God to say to Adam, name the animals. I'll call them whatever you call them. It wasn't like, well, I wanted that to be a giraffe, and you just called it a rhinoceros. And now, oh, I'm really upset because you missed my will. God really wanted, Adam, go ahead, name this stuff, and I'm with you. Whatever you call them, I'm going to call them. I think that's a wonderful open door to the kind of thing we're talking about. God wants to be in this with us. His love doesn't depend on our obedience. That's not what Jesus is saying about if you love me, you keep my commands. It's not his love for us. It's that we get to live in freedom and live in love as we respond to his ways. But I don't think his ways are every little decision. God has a perfect will, and if you didn't get it right, you mess up.
And you know what's so disempowering is the notion that you're walking on some kind of tightrope. Like if one misstep and you're going to get it, or that there's no margin for kind of the insecurity errors. I mean, I look at the dangers of my selfish self. Gosh, how can that misdirect me all the time? Well, it can. God knows that. He's working with me on that. And he's okay. He's not all uptight.
Yeah, and not only does the New Testament make that point, the Old Covenant, the Old Testament, makes that point repeatedly. some of God's favorite people, some of the people he's trying to work most through, Abraham, David. We're seeing incredible mistakes made, and God still loving them and winning them to a reality, not compelling them to one, winning them to one. And he does have incredible margin patience for when we mess up, because we are going to.
And they're not instantly vaporized off the scene.
Or rejected from the relationship, exactly. And I think the only thing that secures, whatever's going to work out well in the future is that you stay in relationship. You stay in relationship, you can fix anything.
Yeah.
Once you jump out of it, you're on your own.
Yeah.
And if you want to be on your own, it's a way to live. Great time in Oklahoma, boy. Had a great time. Sarah joined me for part of my trip in Okietown.
You were at women's conferences.
Let's not let that get out.
Oh, sorry.
I'm kidding. Well, the first one was neither one of them were women's conferences, but they were both sponsored by women's ministries.
Okay.
In fact, at the first conference, they've been sharing these conferences for years, and they have been women's conferences. They're wanting some of their husbands to come. So they said, who can we invite that maybe some of the husbands will come? This is how they introduced me. And they decided to have Wayne come out here so the men would come to the conference.
Ooh, yeah. Do you wear your football jersey?
No, I got up and said, gee whiz, I've never been man bait before. I'm not sure if
did
I would
the meeting recover.
I was thinking if I was going to think of something that was man bait, it wouldn't look like me. I'm just absolutely certain that that's true. I think Miss Oklahoma might be better man bait if she's not a moron. But in any case,
nice tag on right there.
Yeah,
if she's not a moron.
Well, some people who make it that level these days are a little off their rocker. But anyway, we digress to the editorial comment.
Sorry.
Actually, it was fun. You know, I learned something, though. I taught a 15-minute deal on Friday night, and I taught 2 one-hour sessions on Saturday. I had more comments off the 15 minutes I talked than the 2 one-hour sessions.
And
interesting.
Because?
Compact, concise. I mean, I could tell when I was doing it. I'm going, I've never shared this better in 15 minutes, what I'm sharing right now.
Well, it takes forever to kind of distill things down to that kind of clarity. And that's what I realized.
Well, I think, too, doing an hour-long sermon is about taking a thought and stretching it through illustrations and scriptures. And most any sermon...
Preacher-ease is always in triplicate.
Most sermon could be done in 10, 12 minutes, which is, surprisingly enough, 12 minutes is the attention span of your average adult. It is. Scientifically proven. Not just your junior high kid.
The mind can absorb only what the seat can endure.
Well, actually, these are actually better seats for that kind of thing.
But had more time.
Had a great time there, and then I was down with a group in Edmond, and it's a women's counseling. And not women. They're trying to move beyond women. Basically, you know, it's had some incredible impact among women finding some freedom in life in Christ. He Loves Me book has been something they've used a lot. And we had a great time. Again, it was open to others, and we had a whole bunch of people packed in from all over. People drove from Kansas and whatever to be for the evening sessions. Wonderful time with them. And on Tuesday morning, Sarah and I went down to the Oklahoma City Memorial, where they offered P. Mora building that was blown up by Tim McVeigh in 1995, I think. That's an amazing memorial. If you get anywhere near that, you got to go see it, because it's on one side of the memorial is a wall. And the other end is a wall as well, and there's a tidal basin between the two walls, and on the other side is a grass foot imprint of where the building was. Empty chairs for the 160-some-odd people that died in that explosion that day. And on the one wall, it says 901. On the other wall, it says 903.
Mm.
This is 902 on that day, and... We went to the museum. I've been to the memorial before with my son a number of years ago, but we didn't go to the museum. We were on our fast trip to California. We just stopped for a bit to look, but we went to the museum. It really starts that way. You know, a day like no other, and it's just what was going on in the headlines and newspapers of Oklahoma City that day, all up to 9:01. And then 9:02, this catastrophic explosion, and then everything that followed in the aftermath, people who died, the rescue efforts, the brave people who rushed inside and got killed trying to rescue others, one gal, a nurse that just ran in the building to help with injured people, got hit in the head with some falling debris. It was very moving. You sit there, and Sarah and I both walked out going, you know what? One thing, we really don't control anything about our lives. Anything can change tomorrow.
Yeah.
Anything could change in the next minute. We live in this false illusion of we do everything right, we're good, and it's just not true. And two, just how precious every minute of life is. That's how we came away from that. Just every minute is precious.
That's cool. I think sometimes, sadly, people can respond to that with a sense of fear. And it's like, gosh, I think that would miss so much of the value of that moment of reflection, of just recognizing. I've just been struck this last month over and over in a number of different ways. It's just, I think something that God's been bringing to mind is just valuing the people and the moments in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes I have a frame of reference where I go, oh, I can, and I see the depth of value there. Other times, you know, life can just kind of, you can almost shift into neutral and it's a little bit of a blur. And it's like, you're not really living life in that moment.
Yeah. Particularly for guys who get lost in the idea that my achievements define my life or lack thereof. I mean, that's, I think guys kind of end up in that space of work and...
I think we're wired, sadly, a little, or we're dysfunctionally wired that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, coming away from the vacation we had, waking up to our granddaughters in the house every morning in Hawaii. We were in Hawaii, but Hawaii was not the treat. It was a great place to hang out, no doubt. But being with our family, just hanging out with my son-in-law and daughter, two grandkids, and just doing some wild stuff together. I mean, gosh, I did two things with some of that mob at different times that were two of the most breathtaking experiences of my life. Snorkeling with manta rays at night in the Pacific Ocean. Unbelievable. 12 to 14 feet in wingtip to wingtip. And massive. And they would just come right up next to you because you're sitting by a light that's gathering plankton, and they're plankton suckers. So they're coming right up the plankton stream, just sucking it all in. And they'd come right up to your face with their mouth, probably a 4-foot mouth wide open. And then as they'd rotate to miss you, chest would bump, and we're going, okay, this is a pretty awesome moment in creation.
Wow.
And then we'd heard about a brother who does night flights over the lava flows, and he used to be a fighter pilot in Afghanistan. And so a good friend of ours said, you got to go. So Sarah and I got on his plane one night, and we flew over the lava flows, and it was spectacular. Gosh, the lava flows. I mean, we were the one caldera. He said, normally you just get a little orange glow out of that. We were going, it was really active at the moment we were there. And you could actually look clear down the caldera to where it was boiling. He said, probably 300 feet below the earth into this magma chamber that's down there. And then we flew a little further down to where it goes into the coast. And we flew over this.
It gives you a different perspective on life.
Oh, it was breathtaking. The whole trip was breathtaking, not just seeing the lava. And then at night, there's a big 2-mile lava flow that had broken out. And it was just all black except for this river of fire. And we just kept circling it. And you could see the lava just gushing out of this lava tube and then hardening almost, you know, not 2-3 feet away from the opening. Rock already is forming because it's 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit coming out and hitting temperatures that are 70s or whatever. That was just massively beautiful. And then we're flying back, and he's talking about Mauna Loa, Mauna Kea, the big mountains on Hawaii. And he was describing some of that, and we were looking at the stars because night flight, so we're seeing the stars coming out. And he was talking about the Mauna Kea telescopes going back 137 million light years, looking back into space. And so, yeah, just this awesome sense of the beginning of time. These telescopes are going way back. And the newest Earth just created, the newest bit of land created on Earth in the same moment.
That's wild.
So we come out of all that magnificence, and then this Oklahoma thing and the memorial, again, just, wow, every moment of this world is precious.
It matters.
And that's lovely. And then yet to realize what one man's act of selfishness could do in a world. One man's angst and evil. And the pain it could cause hundreds of families and people, 160 lives taken in a moment. Number daycare center, if you remember. So they're like brother and sister killed in this explosion. Parents lost both kids. You just go, gosh, one man's act of evil, and God doesn't stop it. We live in this world where ugly, beautiful stuff happens and ugly stuff happens. And man, it makes you both enjoy the moments here that are precious and look forward to a day when all moments will be precious and that evil is done away with. I mean, I get why the world needs a little wrath to cleanse of the horribleness that sin and selfishness has done to our world, no doubt.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is reacting in your own selfishness to someone else's. It doesn't work. It doesn't extinguish it. It doesn't, you might have your one-upsmanship or I'm going to make it even, but it's like it only exacerbates the problem.
That's what James talks about when he says, you know, you have these wars and conflicts because you want what you cannot have. And see, the escalation of selfishness, it's just dumb, dumb as donuts.
Yeah, and it's like, I think the only thing that is making sense to me is responding with love and forgiveness is how you can almost like take that super ball of selfishness and stop it from rebounding all over the room.
I wish that were true. I would say only if that person responds to it, because selfish people can be abusive about forgiveness and compassion.
Yes.
And just I mean, that's how abusers thrive. They hope you'll be forgiving and loving, and they can keep doing what they're doing. I think I don't have any way to sort that out. I think we do live in the world as best we can, loving and kind, trying to live inside relationships that get broken. Try and heal them as best you can. If not, do we just get overrun by people who decide that selfishness is their new MO?
No. I think that's where you need the wisdom of following a somebody called Jesus as to in which situations what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, it's like so oftentimes a kind word turns away wrath. Not always.
Right.
And sometimes we're, you know, it's like I look at the parable of the little widow woman who stands up to the unrighteous judge, and Jesus kind of commends her. This is like, when I return, is there going to be anyone who has that kind of faith? Yeah. And you're just going like, gosh, that's weird. You know, I bet lawyers love that passage because that validates some of their profession or something. And it's like you look at the challenge of going, you know, when am I serving my interests? And when am I serving, hopefully, kingdom interests? When is it about truth and when is it about preference? And
what if we don't see it the same way between you and another brother? What if you and I don't see it the same way? So
yeah,
you think kingdom preference for you is different than what I think the kingdom would ask us to do?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's like, again, you just...
And that's where 1,000 things split.
Yes.
It does. And
yeah.
People get hurt.
But I think that's where there's the call and the power of choosing to live in relationship. Because that's the only place you can sort it out. What do you do if it doesn't work there? That's where I'm at a total loss.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do when there isn't the capacity to appeal to a dialogue. I mean, I think the thing I've so appreciated about our relationship was we're both strong enough to stay in it.
Yeah, and tell me what you want. If you're unhappy, tell me what you want. I might be able to help you get there.
Yeah.
I might.
Yeah.
Nuts. Anyway, some email. We've got lots of email the last 4 weeks.
We got a bunch piled up.
On vacation, whatever. This came from Ray, and he talked about after some disillusionment and distance from Christianity for 30 years. Hmm. And then he started reading some of the books we put out recently, and he said, I started to listen to the God Journey, where it was revealed to me what I've been missing and had missed. I don't know if this makes sense. Jesus I adored, the Holy Spirit I revered, the Father supervised, and I was emotionally and very damaged as a child and have carried that hurt child daily.
Hmm.
Though we have never and perhaps will never meet, just sitting and letting your conversations wash over me is working a healing I could not have imagined.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man. I love that. I love the fact that just and I hear what he's saying about seeing the Father as the supervisor, never as the Abba. Religion does that. I grew up the same way. And my father was an Abba. My fleshly father was a loving, dear, wonderful man. We just talked to him on Father's Day. I love what he added to my life. So I don't have issues with fatherhood in general, but the father to me in religion was the big guy with the club.
Yeah.
And the gavel and the condemnation. And Jesus was the one sneaking down here to rescue me. And man, when you find out that the father was all wrapped up in Jesus too, that Jesus was the full representation of the father's nature, man, it just changes. This father is every bit as endearing as the son.
Yeah, there isn't a good cop and a bad cop. They're the same one, and he's not a cop.
Yep.
You know, it was so fun for me on Father's Day. My kids were, they were just a delight. They were all like, well, Dad, what can we do? You know, they're talking about, you know, it's going to be your day. And it's like, well, I don't really know how to do a my day thing. And I just said, the biggest gift that I'm right now enjoying is what we're sharing. I absolutely love my kids. And I enjoy them as my friends. They are my playmates. And we sat around dinner and we talked about that. I said, do you guys realize how special this is? And they sat and they realized, because not a lot of their friends had that same dynamic.
Yeah.
They do. They know I am part of their playmate.
Yeah.
You know? And I said,
I'm man bait and you're playmate.
There you go.
We're headed downhill here.
There's no gift that you could give me that is a greater gift than your friendship. I said, you could be, disinterested in me. You could not want me to play with you. Right. There's a lot of things. I mean, they're at that age where it's like, they're doing their own stuff. And it's like, it is so fun to go, they want me in their life because of our mutual enjoyment.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
And I go, that's what this whole thing is with God. Is there something I can achieve for you, Jesus? I really don't think that does anything for him.
No. We had a very different Father's Day around the Jacobson household.
What'd you guys do?
Well, I'm normally, first of all, I haven't been home the last two Father's Days. I was in Europe both times, and so missed being here for that. This year I was home, but I'm big on golf tournament. U.S. Open always concludes on Sunday. So usually the family goes, we eat dinner, but
it got rained out.
I'm pretty much watching the golf tournament the whole time. This time, because it did get rained out and they weren't going to finish that day anyway, I just let it tape and didn't worry about it. And we had a great meal with our family. We went out, came back, and then we played frisbee golf. And my son-in-law, this was a lot of fun. We were out there for, a couple of hours throwing frisbees around and picking golf holes and trying to trick people into all kinds of stuff, hitting trees, hitting people. It was just a ball. But like you said, at the end of the day, Sarah and I sat down, and our deal is the same way. Those relationships right now with our family, our friends, and we've had some people this week from years ago that we used to know and people that we've just met, and we really are in the quiet joy and beauty of just relating to the people God's given us right now, our children, their children, the world around us. That's all good. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, just the phrase, rightly treasuring what matters.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, it's like, I think it was fun. We were sitting at the dinner table again, and Jonathan, his birthday's coming up, and so he's already kind of thinking about, what kind of haul am I going to get? What's the stuff? And there was a gift that he knew one of his friends wanted to give him. And it was a video game that Kelly, looked sideways at. Like, I'm not so sure want you to have that
yet. Not coming here.
And it was fun because I sat there going like, okay, well, let's get to the bottom of what this is. I know why mommy's reacting to this. Jonathan's looking at me like, Dad, rescue me, help. And I'm going like, I don't know. I think I'm kind of in agreement with mommy on this.
I think I'm with mom on here.
And I recognize, well, what do you like about this game? And it's like, well, they like being able to get online and play it together. And I realized, this is a social thing. It doesn't really matter what they're doing. It's the fact that they can get online and play it together. And if they all have the same thing, then it's they can go someplace together.
Right.
And just helping him recognize, hey, that's what this is about. This is really about your desire to be with your buddies, right? Well, does it matter what you're playing? Is there another thing you could actually be playing that would give you that same sense of shared enjoyment?
That wouldn't be stealing cars, shooting people, and raping women?
I don't think they make anything else than those, but it's like we're trying to get.
It must be a better game somewhere.
I think so. It's like we got to get somewhere.
But
it was just, it's like for him to get that light bulb was such a blast, and then for him to recognize, we're not trying to take that away from you. We're just concerned about the activities stealing from your own heart.
Yeah.
And it's like when he finally got that, it wasn't mom's doing the restrictive thing. He recognized, we're trying to care for your heart so that you can enjoy those relationships without any destructive thing happening around it, if we're able to have a say about that environment. And when he got that, it's like, hey, do you realize you need to be making those decisions? Is this protecting your relationship and your heart? If it is, great. If it's not, then you need to be making that decision. If you don't seem capable, we're going to help you. But we'd love for you to be able to make that sort of self-editing thing. And it's like the light bulb came on. And I'm just going like, gosh, if you can transfer that to the things here written in the Bible, I think that's the same heart that God has towards us. He's not trying to restrict us, take away our fun.
Absolutely.
But it's the whole sense of this allows you to enjoy the relationship.
Enjoy the fullness without doing the things that destroy and twist what God made us to be. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But you make me pine away for the old days, man. I'm glad I grew up when playing with your friends meant they came over and you played hide and seek or something. Not you sit in the computer, stare at a computer and
no,
talk.
I think this
it's
is
just a weird world.
No, they still do that. We get Nerf battles like you wouldn't believe.
Good.
But I think this is, I realize in the heart of this generation, technology is their means to communicate.
So somebody needs to get their flight simulator game so we can,
yeah,
I can fly
crash
from here and shoot people down in D.C.
Yeah.
or something. That'd be great.
Cool.
Todd took exception to our Living Beyond the Recipe podcast.
Oh, is that the guy that didn't like cookies and was...
He says, I love cookies.
I know, yeah.
The other day I had a solid few days of overdoing it with cookies, so I went to the gym at 9 p.m. Who goes to the gym at 9 p.m.?
Someone that overdid it with cookies.
Said, I love to listen to God Journey while at the gym. It's the best place for me to focus, and I was looking forward to listening to your latest podcast while working out and trying to get my mind and body off the cookie binder. Man, how I wished I had read the description of Living Beyond the Recipe beforehand. Well, I appreciate the cookie analogy, and you're talking about the difference between truth of a recipe and tasting the reality of what the recipe makes. It truly was a painful podcast for me. Bad timing. I know you wanted it to be painful. You said as much, Wayne. Well, well done. As y'all talked, I could hear the cookie chips smacking on your lips and the warmth of the cookies as your voice just got a bit cookie muffled. The mms and wows didn't help either. I was sure I could smell them. Like I said, I appreciate the analogy. It was inspired. Yeah, just don't do it again. By the way, I'm also addicted to ice cream, so if any of you...
Oh, yeah, we got to do one of those.
If any of you have a great ice cream analogy, do a brother a favor and give him a heads up. I don't know what more of a heads up we could do. We put a picture of the cookies with the podcast, Living Beyond the Recipe, with all about chocolate chip cookies. So we'll do the ice cream one
sometime. Yeah, but I don't think in the iTunes download they have all that.
I hear you. Favorite ice cream. Might as well talk about it. He brought it up.
Homemade vanilla.
Ooh.
Churned outside.
Homemade vanilla. Not me.
Oh,
not
yeah.
me. Me? Can I say this?
Yeah.
Cold Stone Creamery. Dark chocolate ice cream. Chocolate chip cookie dough. There it is again. Smashed in. Then drown that puppy in hot fudge. I am a sick, sick boy. Cause,
see you at the gym at 9.
Oh, my gosh. That's me. But I do that about 3 times a year. So.
All right. Well, hey, go light your fireworks and don't blow your hands off.
And I always get the smallest bit. Why are we done?
I think
are you done? Are you
stop.
Done? No, we haven't.
I'm going to get ice cream.
Well, that we could do shortly. Todd, if you'd like to join us, we'll be at the... Cold Stone Creamery in Thousand Oaks a week and a half ago. And this is from David in California. He said, wanted to share something that struck me when I read the title of one of your podcasts, Fragrance of Father. I think the Holy Spirit reminded me of my father's fragrance. To this day, I can imagine how my dad smelled as I grew up. Whether it was his BO or deodorant or whatever it was, doesn't matter, and I don't care. When I get close enough to my dad to smell that fragrance, my heart softens. I feel safe. I know how loved I am. How true also that it is with God in our current reality. Have a great week. Isn't that good?
Oh, that's awesome.
I think that's what the whole point is.
That's something worth aspiring for, that my smell can make that connotation in someone's heart.
Yeah, no kidding. And then just a couple of quickies here, because I think I want to get these off my to-do list. Duran said this, I read The Shack, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, and He Loves Me, all in the span of about a month. I started this journey almost 10 years ago in the early days. I didn't really even understand that I was on a journey. I just assumed I was freaking nuts, in capital letters. Only found your podcast earlier this year. I've been listening ever since. I've passed along the books and the podcast to my wife, my parents, my friends, and basically anyone that is as nuts as me and on this journey. I know you guys speak of the whole validation thing, and I understand that the love of Jesus validates us, but I have to say thank you for at least confirming that I hadn't totally lost my mind. Well, I guess I did lose my old mindset, but that's really cool to know. It's amazing to see that the journey has many participants, and if we just live love day by by day and moment by moment, we'll see God put these participants in our lives and us in theirs. And as this happens so organically and so beautifully, keep slinging grace, brothers. You seriously rock.
Cool. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I love that kind of thing, too. This from Liz. We both of us grew up in the church. My husband was a youth pastor for 7 years. I was heavily involved with the worship teams and other ministries. Through circumstances too deep to mention here, we simply found ourselves outside all that. My husband resigned from his job, and we committed taking a year off from church stuff, and we did, only we didn't stop at a year. We're going on 3 years now, smile. Seems that this was once deemed a break has really become a change in lifestyle and philosophy. God has taken us on an amazing journey of really discovering who he is, what he is about, and how to really, and I mean really, love those around us. He has been showing us there is indescribable freedom to be found in him. Like so many others out there, we're at a safe place in our walk with him that really is beyond description. We're so thankful to be in this place, even though it can simply mean even though it can be difficult at times, we are so appreciative of what you guys do. I've heard you so freeing. Goodness, I can't even read tonight. You guys help us put into words what we're feeling and what we're going through. It's a breath of fresh air, every podcast. It's added a whole other dimension to our marriage, too, which we're loving. Lots of Sunday mornings, we'll sit down with a cup of coffee or cocoa, listen to you two, and then just talk afterwards. Many things mentioned on your podcast are catalysts for our conversations during the week, conversations that draw us closer to him and to each other. So thanks. May God richly bless both of you.
Oh, you got to love that.
Pretty cool, Liz. Wow. Love what God's doing in you. Love how that's drawn people to himself. Love, and I understand what Duran was saying about the whole validation thing, and we're not really meaning that. When you find confirming voices for what God's planted in you, that's not what I mean by validation. I think that's just a great thing. I think God does want to speak to us through two or three confirming voices. I think what you and I mean by validation is when I need your good opinion of me to feel good about myself.
Yeah.
That's a different deal.
That's bondage. That's not freeing.
It's not having confirmation for the journey I'm on. It's finding validation in other people so that I find my settledness in knowing that there are other people
that approve
of where I'm at on this journey. And
there is no substitute to the joy of being able to sort of rest in knowing that you are loved. Yeah. And that it's not a performance dynamic. It's not a byproduct of I did thus and so, therefore I am. It's the fact that, you know what? He loves me. Period. And what the life that allows is just awesome.
Yeah, and if no one else around me gets that, it doesn't change the reality.
No.
That's the freedom.
Yeah.
Danny was talking about that a couple of weeks ago about, you know, if both parents aren't on the same page here, it's not for you to change the other parent. You get to live in the freedom of what God's doing in you.
Regardless.
Yeah, and you get to treat people differently and live differently, and I love that. So, yeah, you don't have to have anybody else say, yeah, you're right on, but we get to live in that freedom and grace anyway.
That's cool.
And then from Derek, we'll leave it this because I know we're kind of getting late, but I think that what I love most about the show is how much you two just seem to genuinely enjoy being together.
We do.
Sure, it's a project, and there's a mission at stake. I don't really know that that's true. I've never felt like there's a big mission at stake.
I forgot about that.
Other than, I think what we want to do is exactly that. Have a conversation that would help other people have similar conversations with other folks they know. But you two would probably just spend time together without any mic or recording equipment if it wasn't available and if God didn't call you to do it together with the show. And I didn't even know that God called us to do it together. I mean, something we felt right about doing, and we did it, and
I remember when we started in Oxnard, sitting at your little bistro table, and we actually had
bistro.
We had something to drink the first time.
No, third time. We were trying
little home on the prairie thing or whatever.
It didn't work well.
But the reality was, I've always enjoyed the conversations, and I haven't thought, oh, gee, we're doing something other than really talking about shared life that we're learning.
Yeah.
The fact that other people, I mean, I'm glad there's other people that benefit from it, but I think the simplicity is the fact that it is about living life. It's not being an audience or I'm the speaker. It's like, if you're going to share this life, I don't know how to do this without other voices in my life helping me process his voice and direction.
Yeah, and it's ruined me. I mean, I almost hate, like, having to do an hour-long sermon for something. I just, like, Man, I'd much prefer.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
I was talking to a Presbyterian pastor yesterday who wants me to come out to their fellowship out in the East Coast. And I said, well, you know, I'm hoping to come in, and I know you want to say on the He Loves Me themes and all that. I said, but have you read So You Don't Want Church Anymore? You know where people might access some of my websites? I've read the book. I love the book. If you want to talk about that on Sunday morning, that's fine with me.
I'm going, uh-oh.
Okay, this is not like most Presbyterian churches I know. But he said they really are. And this is, I mean, we're Sarah and I are being invited to a marriage conference, and they're talking about 300 people attend. So it's not a small little...
Right.
It's seemingly somewhat significant in size. And so I said to him, I said, you know what would be most comfortable? What if we did a dialogue? What if we just sat up there like Brad and I do a podcast? Yeah, I heard your podcast. I said, yeah, why don't we do that? He said, I've never done it. I'd love to do that. And it's ruined me for the whole speech thing. I think speeches do far less to impact people than conversations. But the other side of that is this. I forget most of the time we're taping. I'll be in Oklahoma or somewhere else, and somebody starts with, Wayne, what about, and they share some personal detail from my life. I'm like going, how do you know that? Almost a little like, who's talking about me? And it's like, did we talk about that on a podcast? I even forget the mics are here sometimes, and then I'm saying stuff that I get killed for later out there in the real world.
That's great.
Derek finishes, but it's a glimpse into your hearts and the heart of God as you both and each walk with him where he takes you. Thanks for the encouragement and the laughter. It reminds us we're not alone in this, and we're not as alone in this as we feel.
Yeah.
Which is part of the ever-expanding conversation.
Yeah.
July 4th tomorrow, you blowing fireworks?
Yeah, we'll probably have Roman candle fights.
They're illegal out here.
I know, but we're going to go to Fillmore.
I'm gonna sit out on my porch and I'm gonna report every neighbor that launches a bottle rocket.
There's
a lot of dried brush around.
Bomb.
This is a great statement about legalism though, because you didn't used to have bottle rockets down here until they made them illegal.
And now they're everywhere.
Well, no, they were always illegal in California, bottle rockets, and you never saw them. But about 5 years ago, because of the high fire danger, they made regular, safe and sane fireworks illegal in every place except Fillmore.
And they've proliferated. I can't even say that word.
So if you blow off a safe and sane little cone that doesn't do anything, you're breaking the same law as if you shoot off a bottle rocket. Now there are 100 times more bottle rockets being shot off in this area than there would be. Because it is illegal and it's high fire danger, and I'm turning them all in. All my neighbors, I'm announcing it now. I'm becoming a legalist after sundown on July 4th for 4 hours.
You've got to go to my old neighborhood. They take a truck down to Mexico, come back, nearly blow up the pickup.
My old neighborhood did it too. This time, I'm turning them in.
Oh, God bless you.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.